Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on January 13th, 2023, Friday, January 13th, and is current through Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, so beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a regular news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 5 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from lots of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is co-host of the Scene and Nerd podcast. It's Will Polk. Will, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
All right, well, I ask my guests this question every week. I want to know something that's got you excited about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
What's got me moving at Warp 10? So actually, I have 2 things.
Okay.
That I am very excited about Trek. The first one is 10 days ago, we celebrated the 30th anniversary of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
That we sure did. Which episode did you watch that day?
I watched a couple episodes that day. I did watch Emissary.
Very nice. Classic.
Classic. Takes me back to freshman year in college and high-fiving everyone when we saw Ben Sisko show up on that screen. And also, I'm really a big fan of Garrick. So I find myself rewatching Garrick episodes all the time. And so I rewatched The Wire and The Dias Cast.
Oh,
so,
love that. Oh, The Dias Cast is one of my favorite episodes in the whole series.
Yeah, that's definitely any Garrick episode, but you know, there's some that really stand out, and that's one of them. And Improbable Cause, of course, and then of course, you know, 5th season episodes as well. Whenever we discover men in prison, whenever Worf,
in Purgatory's shadow and by Inferno's light.
Yeah. So DS9, as you can see, is definitely my it's my jam as far as Star Trek series. That's my go-to. Anytime I want to do a rewatch, that's where I go. But I've also recently, in the last month or so, discovered the Shuttle Pod show. Podcast with Connor and Dominic. And really have started watching Enterprise again. And there are definitely some episodes that are definite rewatches for me. First Flight and Broken Bow, so many others. But I started watching the 3rd season again.
Yep.
And really have gotten to that back into Enterprise and really enjoy their podcasts and just hearing their experiences and having the guest stars on and former cast members, etc. And it's just a fun show. And also just learning about, you know, their careers in general. I mean, Dominic, I think they had a multi-part series of Dominic's days from a young lad in the UK and working his way up to the Vidal Sassoon ads and everything, and into, you know, what the voice work he's doing now, in addition to the that, and of course Connor's work after Enterprise. So those are my things I've really been enjoying about Trek lately.
That's very cool. Yeah, I mean, 30th anniversary of Deep Space Nine, can't go wrong with that. I myself watched The Way of the Warrior on the anniversary day itself, just because I love The Way of the Warrior so much. I could just rewatch that every night forever. And I also like the Shuttle Pod show a lot too. It is great. I really enjoy the dynamic that Connor and Dominic have. And like, initially I sort of wondered, like, so they started off just kind of talking to Enterprise cast members and kind of talking about their own experiences. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if this is sort of going to turn into something a bit more like the Delta Flyers, where eventually they just start picking up the show and then, you know, just taking it episode by episode. But actually, since they've come back after their summer break, they've been doing these, like, really quite nice in-depth interviews with some of the stars of other shows. I listened to Walter Koenig. Mm-hmm. I listened to them talk to Andrew Robinson. I thought that was a really great episode with Andrew Robinson. Yeah. So yeah, love that. All right. Well, speaking of Deep Space Nine's 30th anniversary, well, this is tangentially tied to Deep Space Nine's 30th anniversary. So what I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is that I just 2 days ago, 3 days ago, who knows, time Flat Circle, completed my latest franchise rewatch for the Star Trek franchise. So I started in August of 2021, which was the 55th anniversary. We're now in the 57th anniversary year. Oh, no, I think we're in the 57th anniversary year now. And so it took me a year and a half to get through everything. I did it in in-universe chronological order.
Oh, wow.
Grouped together by seasons. So started with Enterprise season one, and I ended with Strange New Worlds season one, because by the time Strange New Worlds came out, I was in like TNG on my rewatch. Mm-hmm. So I added it in at the end. But if I had done it in proper order, Discovery season four would have been the last, because that was the sort of furthest out in the timeline. And I had a great time. I every 5 year anniversary. So I did it for the 50th. I did it for the 55th. I guess that now commits me to doing it again for the 60th. I do this, right? I watch everything, and I had a great time again. I'm just as much of a massive Star Trek fan as I was 5 years ago, as I was the 5 years before that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on down the line. And I wanted to tell you what my top five seasons were. So I ranked them all. I watched them all, and then I ranked the seasons.
Okay.
So from the number one pick, which I'll tell you in a second, to the bottom pick, which was the animated series season two, just because I don't vibe with the animated series all that much.
Got it.
But we won't focus on the negative and the seasons that I didn't like. Let's focus on the positive and the seasons that I did like. So I'll count you down my top five, and it'll become obvious why the tie-in to the Deep Space Nine's 30th anniversary is here. So in fifth place, we have Deep Space Nine season seven. I mean, can't beat that final arc.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great episodes in season seven, but it's not quite as good as some of the other seasons of the show. Esri's a great character, but they do end up having to spend quite a lot of time establishing her when there are, you know, other things that they kind of needed to do. Okay, so number five, Deep Space Nine season seven. Number four, Deep Space Nine season five. Yep. So really love season five. We were just talking about a couple of episodes of season five. Number three, Voyager season four. Love Voyager season four. It's got some of the best two-parters in the whole franchise. Number two, The Next Generation season three. For something about that season for me, it just
oh, that's when that show really found its voice.
And it's my top season of TNG, and it's my second top season of the franchise overall. Like, just every episode for me, there are very, very, very few terrible episodes in TNG season three. And then my number one choice, my number one ranked season for the whole franchise, was Deep Space Nine season six. So three Deep Space Nines in my top five, which was quite a lot. And then there's a bunch of TNG and Voyager that come right after that, and then Enterprise season four is right up there in the top 10 as well.
Well, I knew whatever, you know, I've listened to your pod, and but I did not know you were this big of a DS9 fan. But I feel like even though today is Friday the 13th, I think we had good vibes here with our love of that series, because to me it is peak Trek. So
all right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
Well, with the conclusion of Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, we are all aboard the hype train for Star Trek Picard Season 3. And as the hype train picks up speed, so does Paramount Plus's publicity machine, which stopped by the Television Critics Association earlier this week to discuss the final, or maybe not so final, season of Star Trek Picard. Released in conjunction with the panel at TCA is new season key art for Picard Season 3, which has the final season billing and prominently features the returning seven members of the Next Generation cast, Jerry Ryan's Seven of Nine and Michelle Hurd's Raffi. But it was comments during the panel itself that indicated that while Star Trek Picard is probably coming to an end, Sir Patrick Stewart might not be totally ready for that Star Trek swan song. While speaking during the panel, Stewart responded, "Absolutely yes," when asked if he might be interested in continuing to play Picard, so long as the show maintains the quality level from seasons 1 through 3. "There is still enormous potential for narrative in what we've been doing," he said, "and there are doors left open still. We didn't close all of them." Star Trek franchise showrunner Alex Kurtzman also left the door tantalizingly open for a Picard continuation, saying, "When we started the series, Patrick and we all talked about really wanting it to just be 3 years, feeling like we could really tell a complete story with the season you're now seeing as our endpoint. That being said, anything is possible. If a show blows the doors off the place, as we're certainly hoping it will, still, and we're very, very proud of season three. Who knows? But make no mistake, according to Picard season three showrunner Terry Metalis, season three is a conclusion of a sort. Jean-Luc Picard and the Next Generation never got a final send-off, Metalis said. It felt like after Star Trek Nemesis, there wanted to be one more final story. How better to end that journey than to look back at the beginning and to bring his friends and family from Star Trek The Next Generation? So there's a strong sense of conclusion to that storyline. What this all means and exactly where things go from here will likely depend upon fan reception to season three and also the fullness of time. Will, what's your perspective on these additional tantalizing hints that say there might be a future for the TNG cast and 25th century Star Trek storytelling in the modern era of Trek?
I am cautiously optimistic for season three of Picard. The reason why is I feel like season two for me was probably of the modern Trek, probably the weakest of the live action modern Trek that we've had so far. And so I'm glad that the original crew of the Next Generation cast can come back and, you know, close out their story properly, because Nemesis has not aged well. And I think for many fans, whenever we heard the show Star Trek Picard, we were really hoping to see a lot of the characters that we have gotten familiar with over the last 40 years. It's been 40 years. I guess it has been. Yeah.
We're currently in the 35th anniversary year.
Yeah.
I was born the same year as Star Trek Next Generation, and I'm 35.
Yeah, because 87. Yeah. So it's hard to believe it's almost been that long. Yep. But, but hearing the premise of Star Trek Picard, and, you know, and we did get Riker and Troy in the first season and those were highlight episodes, because that camaraderie, the things that we liked about the characters were back. So I'm hopeful that the positive things from Picard, you know, the growth that we've seen from Jean-Luc, as, you know, from when we last saw him in live action with Nemesis into where he is now in the 25th century, and some of the things that he has grown and learned about himself as he's gotten older. Seeing that with Riker, and seeing that, you know, which we have seen that some, you know, when we first saw the Titan show up in live action, and, you know, both here and also in Lower Decks, but also, you know, seeing what's going on with Worf. For example, I noticed one of the things they noted that we've seen in the promotional materials, and Michael Dorn talk about Worf being a pacifist.
Yep.
And I think back to the episode in The Next Generation with Alexander, and, you know, him coming back, you know, Kimtar coming back in time as the older Alexander because of, you know, Worf going that path. And it's very interesting. I'm hoping they pick up on some of those threads from the Next Generation episode, where Worf going in that peaceful route, you know, ended up leading him getting, you know, murdered on the High Council floor. And so I hope they pick up on some of those threads and why Worf continued to go down that path, knowing that in one version of the timeline, being a pacifist led to his death. So, you know, things like that. Quoth Crusher, Gates McFadden's talked about how she's going to be badass and be able to, you know, really kick his butt and take names in this series, because she was more matronly whenever she returned after her, you know, taking the second season off of Next Generation. So seeing how her arc goes, because I think in the film she did have a little bit more, you know, fleshed out a little bit more. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's her distress signal that sort of kicks everything off. It assumes that, I think Geordi seems to be a starship captain now as well, at least from the trailer. So it's, you know, so I'm just very excited to see where our heroes are at this juncture in their lives and careers.
Yeah, it's super exciting and interesting to think about, like, all of those possibilities. And then I think, you know, some of those possibilities for what potentially comes after season three of Picard, right? Like, clearly enough of them have said, I think Marina said some version of this. I think Gates has said some version of this. Now, Jonathan Frakes has definitely said some version of this. And now Sir Patrick Stewart has said some version of this, where they're like, it sounds pretty obvious that they don't all die in the final episode, right?
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. You know, it is not that much of a final closure to the season. And honestly, like, I'm kind of surprised to hear Sir Patrick Stewart say that there are doors that are open that potentially portend a return for him to Star Trek, because my assumption had always been that by the end of this show, Picard would actually die. But, you know, it's sort of, I don't know, it's some of the kind of coverage and even, you know, the way I kind of winkingly framed the story was about sort of, oh, well, could there be a season four for Star Trek Picard? It doesn't feel like there's going to be a season four for Star Trek Picard, but it does feel like there is the strong potential that the TNG stars, at least, are trying to stoke the possibility of a successor show, which Terry Metalis has talked about the possibility of, and that having some kind of tie into these TNG stars that would allow for them to reappear in some way, shape, or form again to continue to sort of keep those characters alive in the sort of sense of alive in our imaginations rather than alive in the sense of like alive versus dead. But like, I mean, this is my era of Star Trek storytelling, right? Like, I love this sort of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager era. I love all the things that Terry Metalis has been saying about season three of Picard being a continuation of Deep Space Nine and Voyager as well. That sort of, you know, celebration of 20 years worth of storytelling now wrapped up into this one season of Star Trek. And like, I think I'd like some more of that afterwards, please. If, you know, assuming this season is good, which I remain hopeful for.
Yeah, because I, you know, because I think there were some points in season two in particular where they were dropping. One thing that, and even on our podcast, we some like we'll get into is we don't like having nostalgia for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah,
and you know, if you're going to reference and be self-referential with things, have it further the plot, not just, oh, look, there's a, you know, cute line by Rios, you know, paraphrasing Kirk, or, you know, as far as only working outer space or whatever the situation is. If you're going to have it there, make it serve the story. I mean, it may be sacrilege to bring up Star Wars on a Star Trek podcast for some, but I look at Andor this past year, and things are sprinkled all throughout in that show. But where Andor did right as far as like using things from the lore of Star Wars, whereas, let's say, a Boba Fett or Obi-Wan didn't do so as well, was using those elements to further the story. And I'm hoping that in Next Generation, in particular with Picard season three, and it seems that Terry Metalis has said this, and maybe I was listening to a podcast somewhere where he was on or something, but he definitely is not just going with the wow factor of like, oh, we're bringing everybody back. Obviously, we can't bring Data back, but everyone else is coming back.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have, you know, it's just going to be nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, and there's no stakes to the story or anything like that. I don't get that sense that they're going to do that this season. And I think hopefully, given that we do have a fresh showrunner, get some fresh ideas. I mean, I know Kurtzman is still there as well, but given that Metalis is a showrunner this year, seeing the things that where I really felt like they just stretched out season two, really had about six or seven episodes of content, but then they spread it out over like 10. It just felt so long because I just felt like I had a lot of filler because there was unnecessary padding. And I'm hoping they don't do that with this third season of Picard, that when we start, we just jump right into the action. And whenever, and Metalis, I think, noted this, whenever characters do show up, they are, you know, servicing the story and carrying things forward.
Yeah.
And not just there for, just for, you know, oh, we're just checking the box, we got Geordi this week, or, oh, this week we have, you know, lore show up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny in some ways with the sort of sense that, like, There are lots of pieces to Picard season three. It feels like they don't have time to hang around, right? Mm-hmm.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, just the size of the cast alone, having all seven of the main Next Generation crew and them having talked about wanting to and having provided kind of meaty storylines for each of them as sort of a condition of the actor reappearing means that, like, it sounds like it's headed in the right direction. But you're right. I mean, we ultimately won't know until we actually watch it.
But I mean, overall, I am very excited for the possibility, you know, all the possibilities of this season and the simple ability, you know, Like the Undiscovered Country was for the original series crew, to really have a good, solid story to close out their adventures, knowing that even though all of them are now saying, oh, yeah, we might be happy to show up. But, you know, if they do show up in one-offs and, like, you know, in Lower Decks as, you know, in animation or whatever, great. But they do, as far as this one unit, I'm glad that they're getting that proper send-off that it did not get with Nemesis.
Well, with all the Picard Season 3 hype, let's not forget the conclusion of Prodigy's first season, which took a bow on Paramount Plus at the end of last year. Following the season finale, Prodigy creators and co-executive producers Kevin and Dan Hagerman have been on the interview circuit, compiled by TrekMovie.com, to discuss the end of the first season and tease the show's second season, which is already well into production. Speaking on Paramount Plus, the brothers said that, quote, in season two, we're going to see a lot more familiar faces, and that, quote, we promise we're going to deliver the goods in season two. It's magical. Expanding on that, the brothers talked about how the dynamic would change between season one and two of Prodigy. Quote, the end of season one is a bit of a handoff. The kids have had hologram Janeway, who's a kid-friendly Janeway, and now they've graduated to an Admiral Janeway. She's no nonsense. So what you're going to see in season two is you're going to see that relationship blossom. And talking to Cinema Blend, Dan Hagerman also talked about our main Prodigy character's journey from where they are now, under the tutelage of Admiral Janeway, to Starfleet Academy. They've still got more hills to climb to get to that place where they want, now they've tasted it and they want it, he said. That really is one of the engines of season two. As warrant officers, it allows us to actually get them onto a ship. They're almost like consultants, so to speak. I would say they're more like cadets in training, but they're not Starfleet Academy. And while in their interview on the Ready Room, the brothers did not explicitly confirm that the main ship of Prodigy season two would be the Voyager A, they merely said this, quote, Admiral Janeway has promised them a new ship, but not the Protostar. So I think that is something fans can speculate. Something much bigger. I think Voyager fans have a lot to look forward to. Will, what was your reaction to Prodigy Season 1, and are you looking forward to Prodigy Season 2?
I am. I really, really, really enjoyed Prodigy. Whenever it first premiered, Part 1, I wasn't sure what to make out of it, to be honest. It was you know, different take on the franchise, and took me a few episodes. I think maybe about the second or third episode, I was like, okay, I'm in. Usually I have like a three episode rule as far as shows. And once things really got going and then they took the break, I was like, you know, when it came back, the way the arc completed and the sacrifice that the kids had to make and also the sacrifice the hologram Janeway made, was totally in the spirit of Star Trek and really, you know, got a lot of the Star Trek 3 vibes for the sacrifice of the ship, because it seems that the destroying the starship has become kind of a easy trope in Star Trek. But the sacrifice of the Protostar that was made in this episode really reminded me of the sacrifice Kirk made of the original Enterprise. And of course, you know Kate Mulgrew and her talk discussions about that episode, as far as how she really added some sentience to hologram Janeway, and in particular when she played that scene, whenever she was doing the voice work for the scene when she realized that she had to be the one to stay back to destroy the Protostar, really, really spoke to me. And I really felt the emotion when I was watching it real time, that episode, really realized how attached I did get to these characters over the course of the first season, which that's what you want. I mean, I think other than Strange New Worlds, I think Prodigy's probably had the most solid first season of Trek programs.
Certainly helps that they had a full 20 episodes to do it, right?
It does. But in the age of streaming, granted, I know these episodes are short, but having that I don't feel like there was ever an episode where I was just sort of like, okay, what was going on here? Or wasted. Because even with Lower Decks, there are a couple episodes where I was like, and I enjoy Lower Decks, but there were some where I was like, that didn't land quite the writers wanted it to land.
Yeah.
But I felt overall Prodigy was solid throughout the first season.
Yeah, I'm super excited for season two of Prodigy. I think it is really smart for the show to have evolved in this way, mm-hmm. that we are going to have for season two something that was quite different from season one. I mean, the characters will be the same mostly, mm-hmm. but the circumstances and the setting and the sort of, philosophy of the show will be different, but a natural evolution from where season one was. And, I've sort of been reflecting on this over the last couple of weeks, the idea that before the show came out, and the producers were sort of talking about the show, they were like, you know, this is, it's a kid show. So, you know, it's obviously going to be very Star Trek-y, but it's not going to be your kind of traditional sort of Star Trek show of having, you know, starting off with a ship and a crew. And I mean, obviously they did have a ship and a crew, but like, it wasn't a Starfleet crew on a Starfleet ship. It was a, it was a group of kids who found this ship and used it as a means to escape a slavery and, you know, then sort of start to set things right for themselves and for the galaxy as a whole, as it turned out. But like, in some ways, that's kind of a beautiful arc and progression, right? We didn't start with a group of cadets under the tutelage of Admiral Janeway. That was established and it was earned over the course of 20 episodes. So now we go into season two, A, knowing these characters, B, knowing what they have struggled to overcome in order to get to where they are, C, what the relationship is between them and Janeway, and I think sets us and the target audience of the show, who are ultimately the most important, for really just kind of like diving right into that much more traditionally classic Star Trek setting of being on a Starfleet ship and having a mission and there being protocol and things that you have to do. And like, I'm really excited to see these characters sort of bump up against that a little bit, right? And I'm sure there'll be friction associated with that. I'm sure Dal probably is not very good at keeping his boot shined. but that's like, that feels like that that ends up being part of the show, and that's cool, and that's fun, and that's exciting. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to Prodigy season two, even setting aside all of the Voyager sequel, them probably being on the Voyager itself, my expectation being that there will be other Voyager cast members who will show up over the course of the season. So yeah, really looking forward to this one.
So do you think, because I know at the end of the season finale, they were in San Francisco, and
yes,
there was another Protostar class starship.
Yep.
In the hangar, which I assume, I guess, is, you know, NX. I can't remember red sheet number. I guess it's an A as far a Protostar. And I know because, you know, so, but we saw a starship streak by in the sky. And of course, we did get the shuttles that did rescue the kids from San Francisco Bay, which again was another, speaking of, you know, we were talking about callbacks and stuff. That was a great callback to Star Trek IV.
Yes.
And I, you know, and again, serves the story. It was a very natural thing that was there, but it served the story. The kids made it to Earth and were able, you know, after they thought they were lost. But what class, but I guess I bring that up, what class do you think the new Voyager is going to be that will most likely be the ship that will be looking for Chakotay in season two?
That is the $64,000 question, Will. I think, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, do I think it will be Protostar class? No, because Janeway sort of, you know, they sort of said, is that going to be our ship? And she sort of said, no, you know, I have bigger plans for us, which implies to me it's not just not that particular ship, but another ship of the same class, but like it is a bigger ship, right? So probably not Protostar class. Probably not Dauntless class, because it sounds like they only made one of those and it got kind of beat up in the season finale, and that's not the Voyager, that's the Dauntless.
Right.
So yeah, then the question is like, okay, well then what is the Voyager A? Is it a class of starship that we have seen before? Is it is it a sovereign class ship or a you know, I don't know, take your pick, right? Akira class, Centaur class, whatever you want to, you know, take that appeared in the season one finale, or would it be something new entirely? My money is on something new entirely, just because it feels to me like the modern Star Trek shows very much want to sort of put their imprimatur on it by creating new starship classes and relying on the sort of pre-established ones only in so far as, you know, to sort of serve supporting roles within the story. But I would be thrilled to be wrong about that and find that it is a pre-established starship.
I know, like, a Discovery Force, I guess it was the Voyager J, I guess. I think it was an Intrepid class. So you know, it wouldn't surprise me that they go the route of like what we've seen. I like your idea of it being a new class of ship, but at the same time, it would not surprise me if we saw another Intrepid class just to follow the same path that we did with the original series, with, you know, just going from one Constitution class to another one, or the Defiant. I mean, went from, you know, class as well, with the going from Sao Paulo, you know, that was re-Christian. So there's precedent for both.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if it was an Intrepid class, but like one that was a bit more modernized, right? Like yeah. The interiors look a bit different and the exterior maybe looks a little bit different. Maybe it's got slightly longer nacelles or something like that. That it's not an exact copy of the first Voyager, but it is very much like of the same lineage. Yeah, I could definitely see that being the case.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, I really, you know, one of the things you brought up, how you know, going into season two and how everything was earned, with the characters. And one thing that I know Brett Gray talked about with Dahl and found out he's an augment, and how, you know, I'm hoping that they pick up on that storyline further now that he is with a Federation crew and knowing, you know, given the history, and we even see this in Strange New Worlds with, you know, Leon Soon.
Yep.
The prejudice and the feelings that non-augmented humanoids have towards towards augments.
Yep.
And I'm really, really hoping that, and he mentioned it during his interview, but I'm hoping that they do pick up on that in the second season, because I think that'll be a fascinating storyline to go. And also, given that the series is geared towards younger audiences and all, I think it'll you know, really, you know, give a modern take that Star Trek has always had about dealing with prejudice and bigotry and those kind of things, using Dahl as an augment, and who, you know, this happens to be voiced by an African-American actor, really, I think, gives great opportunities for storytelling in the next season.
Yeah, it definitely does feel like, to your fabulous point there, I mean, it is sort of like the black stain against 24th century humanity, right? Like that sense of they have evolved beyond prejudice in everything apparently except for prejudice related to, you know, augmented humans, other alien species. And like that probably is something that, given it's established in universe, they should really be, you know, kind of grappling head on, and would be a really interesting way for them to do that and sort of tell an interesting story reflected back on prejudice as it exists today. So yeah, I really like that idea. I really hope they do pick up on that too.
Yeah.
Well, plans for a memorial to Leonard Nimoy at the Boston Museum of Science are moving forward after a six-figure donation to the project from Android Inc. co-founder Richard Miner. The donation, which allows the project to get underway but does not cover the entirety of the $500,000 cost, will support the creation of a memorial to Leonard that was designed by artist David Phillips and depicts the actor's famous live long and prosper hand gesture. The Star Trek series and Spock's character were an early influence on my interest in science and technology, along with being an inspiration for several of my startup companies. Like Leonard, my parents also grew up in the Jewish neighborhoods of Boston, said Miner in a statement to Trek Movie. Supporting the Leonard Nimoy Live Long and Prosper Memorial Sculpture on display at the Museum of Science in Boston will not only be a beautiful tribute honoring Leonard Nimoy's legacy, but will be a symbol for peace, tolerance, and unity for millions of visitors each year. If you wish to donate to support the Leonard Nimoy Memorial Fundraiser, you can do so at mos.org/Nimoy. Will, what does Leonard Nimoy and the Spock character mean to you?
Well, first of all, I was this week years old when I learned about this this memorial. I had no idea that this was even being something that was being developed. You know, obviously Leonard Nimoy and Spock definitely has a huge impact on me growing up. The original series was my original Trek. And, you know, and of course, whenever we were growing up as a kid playing in the backyard, you know, who was going to be Spock and who was going to be, you know, Kirk and you know, sure. Et cetera.
Which were you?
So I had a funny story. So I ended up being Kirk. And at one time, me and my cousin were like we had watched Amok Time. And so we were like goofing around in my grandmother's house. The scene, you know, and the fight scene there on Vulcan. And so, of course, I'm Kirk, and he is Spock, and he has his version of the Lyra, and he just like bump right in my eye, black eye. So
did you fake your own death?
Yeah, I did after that. Yeah, I did. I was like, no, yeah, I was like, bones. Yeah, but like I said, I mean, those are the things that are great about, you know, whenever you really connect with a franchise and a character like Spock. And, you know, the thing that it was very inspiring for me is as far as, you know, thinking logically and but also, even though he was the motionless Vulcan, he was, as Kirk rightfully said, he was the most human of all, because he, you know, those conflicts that he would have to deal with all the time, you know, keeping things under motion and all. And, you know, how we deal with situations. I mean, there's, you know, there's times that, you know, I'm like, well, what was Spock doing in this situation? You know, especially in a very highly charged emotional situation and helping you to sort of get through things. And so, you know, he was just an amazing ambassador for the show. I mean, even though, you know, he had obviously Nimoy as well chronicled the love-hate relationship he's had with the character, you know, to the point where he, you know, obviously we know he wanted to be killed off, and then they, you know, that did happen, but of course he came back and also, yeah, you know, I think he, with this memorial, I think it's very fitting for him, just given not only the clear influence that he has had over the genre and in the arts and sciences, you know, as far as inspiring people to, you know, pursue that path. And if it, you know, Kirk has his statue in Riverside, it actually in Iowa. So it's only fitting that Leonard Nimoy have one dedicated to him in his home of Boston.
Yeah, it's funny. I've talked a little bit about this on Twitter, but I don't think I've done it on the show before. I mean, obviously, this is terrific. Leonard, so important to the Star Trek franchise as a whole. And honestly, the character of Spock, like, extremely important to the franchise of Star Trek as a whole, because, like, my theory, which is reinforced having just finished rewatching the whole franchise again, is that the Star Trek franchise as a whole is pretty much the story of Spock, not mm-hmm. just the parts that he appears in, right?
Sure.
Begin mm-hmm. with Enterprise. One of the deep undercurrents of that show is romance between a human and a Vulcan. And towards the end of the show, the question of, can Vulcans and humans have a child? And is that, you know, are those two worlds compatible with each other? Discovery is about Spock's family, right? His sister. Mm-hmm. Strange New Worlds is about Spock. The original series is about Spock. The Next Generation is partially about Picard's relationship with Spock and Spock's father.
Yeah.
You know, Deep Space Nine's got a couple of Spock references. Voyager's got some Spock stuff. The Kelvin timeline is about Spock, right?
Yeah.
And then Discovery in the future is about Spock's impact on Romulans and Vulcans and reunification. And so, like, this is such an important character to the franchise as a whole, and that's wholly attributable to the amazing performance that Leonard Nimoy gave. And he's such an inspirational character and was such an inspirational actor that I'm very pleased to see. I think I reported on this when they first announced they were doing this, which was maybe like, I think it was pre-pandemic even.
Oh, wow.
Was when they started talking about wanting to do this. And it's really pleasing to see that, you know, there's now enough funding for it to move forward, and fingers crossed it was a decent amount of funding that puts them, you know, not too far away from the total they need in order to get this done. So yeah, really excited about this, and gives me an excuse to go up to Boston.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you know, I hadn't, until you broke it down that way, I never really, but you're right, I never thought about how integral he is and how interwoven this that Spock is in this franchise. I mean, because he was the only, other than, well, now, well, originally he was the only person to survive the cage as far as being brought over into this, you know, to the series whenever it was picked up at the second pilot. But then, as you stated, I mean, just all throughout, the character's influence, and it is just interwoven into the tapestry of the franchise.
Yeah, it's really, like, it really is incredible how much the character is, like, if there's one character that you remove and the whole tapestry unwinds, it's not mm-hmm. Kirk, it's not Picard,
right?
It's Spock.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, not only, yeah, it both in universe and even out universe. I mean,
yeah,
when you think about the Nimoy's direction,
yep,
of Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4, which, you know, Star Trek 4 still, I mean, to non Star Trek fans, everyone loves the one with the whales.
Yep.
And so, you know, so both in universe and also in real life, the influence in Star Trek 6, which, I mean, many people, you know, as far as Undiscovered Country, again, another, to me, runs right there with Wrath of Khan as far as the films. I have to say, I mean, Khan, you know, basically resurrected the franchise, which, again, Spock is like a very critical piece of that. But, you know, Nimoy's direction, well, Nick Meyer directed that, but, it, you know, Nimoy was one of the script writers for Star Trek VI, so, you know, along with Nick Meyer. So, you know, he's just so interwoven both in universe and in real life, that again, it's very, very fitting that this memorial is being built to honor his legacy.
Well, and lastly this week, IDW have announced that their two new ongoing series entitled Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant will be crossing over this summer in a crossover event entitled Day of Blood. Kicking off on New Comic Book Day, the crossover will see one story told over multiple issues of both comics. According to the co-writer of Star Trek, Jackson Lansing, it's time for Benjamin Sisko to face the past and for readers to finally get a look at the true fallout of the Dominion War. Deep Space Nine is the inspiration for this entire line, so it feels only right that the crew of the USS Theseus come back to where it all started. And according to co-writer Colin Kelly, quote, as lifelong Star Trek fans, Jack and I have been dreaming of this kind of thing since we can remember. This is the kind of event you could only do in comics, with enormous stakes and two starship crews colliding in the middle of a truly deadly crisis. This is our season finale, and it all begins in Free Comic Book Day's prelude to the Day of Blood. Will, do you read any of the Star Trek comics from IDW?
I did in the past, but this may get me back into it. I have a few IDW books from, actually some DS9 ones from back in the 90s, I guess, or maybe 2000s, but I haven't picked up any of the titles recently, but I did see where obviously Sisko was coming back from the Celestial Temple and the continuation of DS9 in the comic line. So, I was familiar with it, but this seems pretty intriguing. So I may actually pick some of this crossover up at my local shop.
Yeah, I had the first couple of issues of Star Trek. I have not had the opportunity to read them yet, but I am really intrigued and excited. And I'm also really enjoying the way that the Star Trek comics now sort of are kind of matching in their sort of style and process the way that like Star Wars comics and Marvel comics are done, right? You have these ongoing titles and sometimes they cross over and tell these larger stories. And like, that's really cool. That's really exciting. And I really like the direction they've been going in of like being interesting and weird and a little bit different. So yeah, this is cool. This is exciting. I'm glad they're kind of doing these kind of hype up things, you know, these sort of events that will, honestly, as soon as we're done recording, I might finally go and read those first two issues.
Awesome. Yeah. But I need to go. I need to, my comic book shop keeps calling me. I need to come check my box. So when I go in there to do that, I'll definitely add this to my pull list.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, my guests and I give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Will, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
I have my wish in theory goes back to Strange New World season one. So
yes, sir.
The season finale for Strange New World season one. So whenever we saw that Paul Wesley was going to play Captain Kirk, I was wondering how in the world were they going to reconcile the line from the menagerie, as far as I met Chris.
Yes.
And so, you know, I really thought they did a very amazing, you know, the retelling and reimagining the Balance of Terror was just chef's kiss. Just put it out there. But of course, then prior to that, I think the franchise's hands was kind of maybe forced, it seemed, whenever his casting for season two was announced. And so I'm wondering, so my wish, theory, speculation is, how are they going to continue, you know, now that we'll be back in proper universe,
yep,
how are they going to reconcile that line? And the only thing I can figure is Pike gets promoted at some point during the season to fleet captain. And I'm hoping I have forgotten. Now, is he a regular or is he going to be semi-regular?
That is unclear. My guess is he might just be a guest star, but
okay,
we don't know is the answer.
Okay. Because a lot will depend on what his status is going to be. Is it a one-off kind of thing like we saw this past season? Or is it going to be a reoccurring role? Because at this point, he'll be Lieutenant Kirk and probably serving on the Farragut. So
yes, yeah. I think that's fair to say.
You know, so maybe Captain Garavik and the Farragut is there when, you know, headquarters, when Chris gets that promotion to fleet captain, and you know, there'll be some story, you know, maybe the Axanar mission or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's my big things that as we look to season two of Strange New Worlds, how they're going to handle James T. Kirk in the proper timeline.
Yeah. It's funny. I think there's definitely some time travel stuff going on, because those pictures that got leaked from the filming in Toronto that forced them to be like, Paul Wesley's playing Captain Kirk, definitely gave like a time travel-y vibe. Like there was a Illinois State Penitentiary prison bus in the background type thing. So it feels like there's lots of ways that the character could be integrated. My guess is that he might just be a guest star. He might just show up, you know, maybe an episode or two, you know, maybe a couple of times during the season. And then, yeah, I'm curious to see how they kind of, you know, if they choose to reconcile that line from the menagerie or not, or ultimately, you know, just sort of decide to set it aside for this kind of bigger story about, you know, maybe trying to create a bit of a relationship between Pike and Kirk. But yeah, I think that's one of the biggest questions for season two. In addition to how are they going to pull off a crossover with Lower Deck, what is the role of Kirk in season two? But I the more I watch A Quality of Mercy, the more I like Paul Wesley's Kirk performance.
Yeah.
I just thought, and it was the last episode I watched of the rewatch, so I just watched it a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that, first of all, Quality of Mercy, best episode since the franchise came back, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Paul Wesley's Kirk was great. So I'm really excited to see how they do integrate the character in season two, and how he's different, right? He's captain in A Quality of Mercy because we're in the future. He's not the captain of the Enterprise, he's the captain the Farragut. But now when we meet him again, he will be a younger man once again, and presumably, as you say, a lieutenant. So it'll be interesting to see kind of who this Kirk is as opposed to the one that we know.
Yeah, so that's my thing. You know, and the only other one is just as we were talking about season two of Prodigy, thinking back to the glimpse of the Sovereign Star class starships in the finale of Prodigy, you know, and given that we got Star Trek Picard coming around the corner, finding out what the fate of the Enterprise E is.
Yep, I would love to know the fate of the Enterprise E. Clearly it has one, since we know there's an Enterprise F, but yep. I'd love to know what it is.
Exactly. So those are my two things for my wishes, or I guess questions that need to be answered.
All right, let me tell you my wish, which is that we got this time last year a sense of the premiere dates for Star Trek seasons going through the spring. So I think it was like at some point in early January, they told us when Picard was going to premiere. I think we knew when Picard was going to premiere, but they told us when Strange New Worlds was going to premiere. And like, we just sort of got a sense of, okay, here's what's happening from here on. And they told us that Lower Decks was coming back for season three. And they told us that Strange New Worlds was coming back for season two. I want that now in the next couple of weeks, because obviously we know Picard season three's premiere date, that's February 16th, is coming up right around the corner. But we have a lot of episodes of Star Trek to fit in this year. Presumably Strange New Worlds season two, presumably Discovery season three, presumably Lower Deck season four, and presumably the first half of Prodigy season two. And I'd like to be able to start planning my calendar out. Are we looking at 50 straight weeks of Star Trek, or are we looking at 10 weeks of Picard, then they'll take a couple of weeks off, then they'll come back and do Strange New Worlds? Right, last year's experience tells us they have no problem going back to back, and actually they have no problem doing some overlapping. And so maybe we might see that this year a little bit too. But like, we're in 2023 now, and so far we only know the premiere date for Star Trek Picard season three, and I'd like to know what's coming up next. And I think too, you know, yes, obviously the hype train's really on for Star Trek Picard season three, but Strange New Worlds season two is not going to come too far after that. And like, I'd like to see a trailer or something, right? Like, we're starting to get to that point where it would be nice to see that, because I think we're definitely within 6 months of seeing Strange New Worlds season two. So that's my wish, is last year, early in the year, I think it was like January 20 something, we got like news about Star Trek shows. I would like us to have news about Star Trek shows this January as well.
Oh, that would be great. And you're right. It was a Trek fan's dream just to see that, basically like a year of Trek. I mean, it was like, okay, MCU, you have nothing on Star Trek.
And you never will. D Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Will Polk, for joining me today. Will, how could people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
Yes, you can. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Will M. Polk, WILLMPOLK. We'll also be covering Star Trek Picard Season 3 on our Scene and Nerd podcast, and you can find that wherever you get your podcast. And thank you again for having me.
It was my pleasure. And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to TrekCore.com. Well, thank you, Will. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.